give them homes. No, he's got a solution to get them, give them homes.
You can't give people in a city like the size of New York.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. He's going to get him out of here. Send him to Canada. Send him right up.
Every homeless person in the entire nation is going to go immediately to New York City for free health care.
San Francisco fixes its issue.
Exactly.
Oh, that's going to suck. Oh, man. No. This is a good thing. This is awesome. Let's get the buses ready. Let's get it with a duel. Okay. Get the
That's insane. They think that it's only going to cost $100 million.
Yeah.
At least $100 million.
There's no way.
Oh, yeah. They billion.
Billion. 600,000 people. That's divided. It's 166.
Well, you're not going to have everybody who lives in the city on it, but you're going to have...
No. It made no sense.
Yeah, but the influx of people coming in, because there's the border to New York City sucks. You can just come right in. Just drive right. It in.
Solid.
This is insane. So, what happened at Wendy's?
Check. Are we live?
Come on, you're not live. Check. Is your mic on?
I don't know. I don't have headphones. I can't hear the bass or the snare. Check.
Is there a...
I don't know.
No.
Oh, it's got to be up. Okay. Check.
There we go.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. I got headphones for you.
Woo.
So what happened at Wendy's?
I'll tell it live.
Poor embarrassed guy.
He didn't look too embarrassed to me. I didn't have a whole gigantic look or anything.
He had a big look.
It was 2 seconds and I was...
Should we start?
The before part with Harry wanting to bang Stone's mom.
She won't listen.
Well, it's a Patreon, so she can't. He will get so mad if we did, though.
How mad, Willie?
Say love.
All right, in the city. Add a new waifu to my harem.
Silly. Stoneway. Harry was playing that waifu game at Liberty and Chill.
Well, how many cell phones did you have? Did he tell you about the guy at the bar? He had 9 cell phones playing Pokemon Go on every one of them. At Kilroy's, I sat down next to him. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, dude?
He had like 9.
He literally had 9, at least 9 phones.
9 newish phones playing Pokemon Go.
That's fucked up. Can I have one of these? Ooh, I'll just do this one. You're not using this thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's what they're there for. Yep.
Is that what they're there for? Yep. Really? Yep.
There's too many cords now. I'm going to tear the whole studio down and redo it. I think I'm going to...
Okay. Hope you get a permit first.
Harry, I think I'm going to take the table long ways again because I think it looks better on video. We're going to start having 3 people regularly.
Okay.
Yeah. But we'll keep your chair so you don't...
Check.
And there'll be more room because that computer's not there anymore.
Check.
Check.
I'm not getting anything. You getting anything?
Check.
I'm nothing. I'm dead. Not even a buzz.
I did give you the right end of that cord, right?
Yeah. I think it was fucked up last time we used it.
You know what? I plugged you in the end.
Oh.
Oops, my bad. I got you, fam.
I'm just waiting on it to blow my eardrums now. Check. Still nothing. Nothing.
I need another cord.
Nothing.
Never mind.
Nothing.
I can't hear anything.
Stone was just genuinely confused by it.
Oh, I got some now. What'd you do? You just jiggling cords?
I think he's got his own
check.
I
can't hear my mic though. I don't know if that you.
Maybe it's you, just you, not hit, not us.
Can you hear me though in your headphones? Check.
No.
Check.
No, he's just pushing buttons.
Check. Okay, I can hear myself now. I don't know what the fuck.
Check 1, 2. Hello?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Sweet.
Maybe I just didn't recognize my voice. It's been so long. Oh, yeah. Super.
Super. Thanks for asking. In the city of Compton. So many chords.
I haven't said any. Stone was genuinely confused by several parts of adult life, I think.
Oh, like mainly airports?
He was blown away by airports.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Superfan Stone came up to visit us this weekend and flew for the first time through the Atlanta airport. He's like, this place is busy. Jared was like, yeah, it's the
busiest hub in the world.
Exactly. He's like, what? Why? Just a babe in the woods.
Welcome to adult life.
I'm on tour in Helsinki, Finland.
I'm Becky Amundsen in Abu Dhabi.
I'm Christy Lustad in Hong Kong.
I'm here in a remote part of southern India.
From the New York Stock Exchange.
Port Elizabeth.
Birmingham.
Berlin.
Damascus.
Jerusalem. Any unremote parts of southern India?
So, the Roku with the remote.
I was going to say the white part, but that's what just... Oh.
Oh, nice. So, you're like a genuine Anderson Cooper here or something.
In the city of Compton.
The Roku is like one of the better streaming devices. They actually have a Roku remote you can get from Roku that you can walk to the TV, push a button, and it makes the remote beep.
Yeah, I can do that from the app.
Yeah. Oh, so like if you lost,
you could lose if you lose your remote.
So I can.
After
my dog eats it and it's out in the yard and a big turd, I can find it.
Yeah.
I lost it in a fold over vacation. And was able to locate it
like a fold.
I've gotten heavy. I've gotten heavy over break.
Just wanted to make sure we were talking about that fold. Laundry.
I watched my 600-pound life and felt attacked.
Was it the where you're like, oh, I need to lose weight so I can get on my 600-pound life. I need to get down to 600.
Harry, I thought you were my friend. Why are you laughing?
Was that live? Are we good?
Yes.
I can't be wasting good jokes like that on.
That's
a good pod.
It's a really bad time right now. Lace had me. I showed Lacey a clip of Joan Rivers, and she's like, "Who the heck is this?" So I spent the last like 4 hours today just dumping Joan Rivers crap on her, trying to speed her up.
The Queen of Mean, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. No, that's
or was that who was that?
Lisa Lampanelli.
Oh. Yeah, she's a bitch.
Well, that seems so aggressive.
She was a lot better when she was like 600 pounds. She lost a shit ton of weight. Have you seen her recently?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably better off for her.
I think she
got
the surgery.
Oh, yeah. I think she did, too.
Drawing a blank. I've looked it up.
Lisa Lampagnelli. She's real funny. Funny comedian, yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Real dirty and real racist.
Okay, now I remember Lisa Lampagnelli.
And so I'm sure she doesn't work much anymore.
She's racist? Gets who?
She's married or was married to a black guy, so uh-huh. It was more jokes, but you can't do that.
I can't joke anymore.
No.
I know.
What are you saying damn it for?
Because I got to put it on a real tripod. Hold on.
You can't see my pretty face?
No.
It's all right. Oh, man, you've got that white supremacist steroids?
Yep, white supremacist steroids.
I want some.
I cannot believe that my neighbor literally is a white supremacist. I was digging through the trash.
Gosh. Let's just start there. You're digging through the trash.
To explain what we're talking about to the patrons.
There was I guess you'd call it a viral screenshot. It wasn't really a meme. I do think it's a hoax account now after doing some research. But there was a guy who he comes off as a leftist and the picture, he was digging through trash and he found some super male vitality, I believe, and he was
bitching about how it's Nazi steroids or something. I can't remember the exact quotes of what he said, but it was rather funny. But he was bitching about, I can't believe I live in an apartment complex with Nazis, and I don't know, it was rather funny. So look that up. I don't know if it's been posted anywhere. When was that? A couple days ago? Was it? Okay. It was posted on the wall Instagram, apparently. I keep forgetting you're off mic. Oh, and your Twitter, your personal Twitter account? All right.
Nice.
That's a... We're having technical difficulties with the Mevio.
No, I just didn't set shit up before.
Oh, since basically it's Chris Spangle being lazy, yep. More worried about his cats and his books than you patrons.
Couldn't secure producer Stone to stay here in Indy.
No, I don't want him to, because then he'd live here.
Exactly. That's the, yeah.
I don't mind.
Yeah. And then we get the wall house. We'll get the house for a wall.
We do need a compound.
Mm-hmm.
The wall pound.
Yep.
The wall pound.
What is this? Is this?
Product placement.
Product placement? Oh, so I should probably, this is not sponsored. I should probably turn that way. Especially, I don't know if I'll be in there a whole lot anymore after what happened tonight. But I would rather, you know what? I was going to go to Chick-fil-A.
Which is always a good choice.
I know, and I probably wouldn't have been,
traumatized?
Traumatized, yeah. I'm a little off my game tonight, people. We'll talk about this later. Yeah, this gentleman decided to turn the Wendy's bathroom into a YMCA locker room. Yeah, I should have just brought like a, I should have just stopped by the butcher, got some meats, air fry some steak up. That would have been neat. Steakums? No, that's like just, I lose money if I buy it.
Got a sweet, sweet porterhouse.
Well done. Is that how you like yours? Well done with ketchup? Like the president?
No. Just grass-fed butter.
Ooh.
On the skillet, and then I threw it down there butter. For 30 seconds, flip, another 30 seconds, take off, let it rest for 30 seconds, and I ate it.
Do a little garlic?
Yeah, toast it. Well, yeah, I seasoned the pan with garlic first.
Oh, yeah.
I seasoned the pan with garlic and salt and pepper, just very basic that way there.
It's all you need.
Yeah, anything else is depends on what you want to do. Like, if you got time or you've got, like, another bad cut of the meat or something like that, you can do different things. Like, I think I took a fruity red wine on some, like, really crappy, like, skirt steak, and I just let it soak there for a couple of days and did that. And then smoked that with some apple wood. It was so good.
Making me hungry now.
Yeah. See, this is why we need the wall compound. You know, I could have been there all day just smoking
food. Smoking meats.
Yeah, smoking meats. You guys would have came in like, ribs are finished, and we just started eating ribs and podcasting.
Oh, I thought he just spit everywhere.
This is like,
I did. I was having flashbacks.
What episode is this? No clue.
I don't know.
I'm a mess.
Today is Tuesday, January 8th.
We know that. That's what you get for numbering episodes, okay?
Well, in the early days, the numbering mattered a lot more, but it doesn't as much anymore. There's not as much like, oh, I remember when on episode 52 you guys embarrassed Creighton. But there's less
336. Sorry, if you got a stupid daily episodes ruining the numbers.
I know. I kind of want to move
helping the numbers.
It is. And I think I've gotten nothing but great feedback on the dailies. Dude. I have noticed that the numbers on the big show have slipped a little. And I've wondered if maybe it's too much content and maybe I ought to move that to like a separate feed. But I also kind of feel like that defeats the purpose. So
if you
delete because there's too much content, then you were never really a fan. And I only want I only want devoted people to this. I don't want Sunshine Patriots. I want real, hardcore, Wall builders.
No, yeah, wall build. Well, there's a podcast.
We call those people masons.
And he just turned up in a whole bunch of content. And if I'm honest, I don't even listen to the main show.
What? Say that again?
I got a podcast I listen to, and I'm a Patreon of. And he puts out so much content. I mostly just listen to the main show. That's it. I don't do the other things. Even though I'm in the Patreon tiers for all the other stuff, I just listen to the main show.
Yeah. That's not uncommon.
Yeah.
I mean, people have different goals, different needs, different wants.
Oh, but I do go back and see the extra shows if they're referenced. Oh, yes. We talked about this in the Q&A episode. I'm like, oh, which episode, you know, set a question in, and you just go back and listen to it.
I have found that the only thing that really matters is titling. What is the title? That's what most, if you're either a big fan or you're just listening based on the title.
Especially with the cost episodes, because I can't. Those get me. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're forgiven. I forgive you.
They're important. I think you should listen to them. Probably not at work.
You might cry.
At your desk.
Audio output.
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 Oh, yeah.
The paradigm of absolute control. And that's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural.
My phone ring?
And this is where we find the source that God made
my ring
to transcend the new world order.
Is it? No.
That's why they want to try to keep us out.
I don't even have a number.
I'm angry. I've had enough of these people. Little bones of Christian murder scum. Now on giant death factors keeping babies alive. Selling their body parts. What more do you need to know about these people? I go out and face these scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green looking skin. And they run around screaming, we love Satan, we want to eat babies. I have them on video. Here is in the creepy, weird, sick stuff, man. She sleeps in the same room with that creepy weirdo woman whose mother wears a hood over her head.
The hell?
That woman number one is ugly. Imagine how bad she smells, man. I'm told her and Obama just stink. Obama and Hillary both smell like sulfur. In a room of vampires, pot-belly goblins, hobbling round, coming after us. My spirit gets close to that evil and I feel it go. We'll start self-centered crap. We don't even notice and it's out. Rising up against us. Millions of pointed people of the very worst type. So pissed. We're gonna stab your daughter at the mall. We're gonna stab your wife, your son. Ooh. We're gonna stab you with a butcher knife. And then the police chief is gonna say, we love our Somalis, we love our Muslims. Oh, they're so good. Oh, they're so sweet.
Nothing gets you pumped like that.
I was watching Fox News. That's a great intro slash song. I mean, that's an anthem.
The Facebook stream started like towards the end of that, so people tune in like, what the f-?
Oh, we were just having our daily Alex Jones devotional.
Muffins is getting bold. She came out and greeted Stone, and
yeah, Muffins is turned over a new year, new you, Muffins.
Yeah. Entering year 8 and ready to fucking party.
That's about time.
Ready to party?
You've been napping for 7 years.
Well, she is a little slow.
Yeah, Oh, yeah. She's a sweetheart, though. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oops.
Oh, that's the last time
that's
she
animal
comes
cruelty.
Up.
Cruelty.
My bad. Yeah. Sorry, Muffins.
Hope PETA's not watching.
Sorry. Are you guys ready?
I was born ready.
Finally get 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. Gets banned next day.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
All right, let's...
I saved me, not you. Because that, like, it is, like, recorded loud. That is louder than anything.
That's... like, I need to maybe... I need...
I totally forgot. I'm so used to doing it to myself.
I need to maybe...
That made me shoot snot out my nose. I'm not gonna lie.
to change that volume.
You can't hear anything else. Everything else is...
I can't hear a... No, there's literally snot on my phone. Like, it's on my phone.
Let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
336 episodes in. You'd think Harry would know not to talk during the intro. But here we are. We're back from our break. We're ready to go. I'm well rested. Well, I was well rested. I'll explain why in a moment. Yeah, we're going to talk about the Green New Deal tonight. Tad Western is here along with Harry Price. And we're ready to get this new year started. New year, same us.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Welcome to the program. Again, my name is Chris Spangle, fresh off of a two-week, three-week break. Nothing was put together. Everything was a mess. It's going to be a weird show. I've been up since 4:30 this morning. Here with me is Harry Price. Harry, how was your break?
It's calm. Calm.
How are you doing? How are you today? How are you, Harry?
This coffee is so strong, I feel like I've done this episode already.
Harry is... Harry is fucked up. Tad Western is here. Tad, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm here. I'm ready for a new year. New year, new me.
Is it really going to be new? I mean...
No.
2 years ago, it was literally a new you.
No, I... Was that two? It seems longer than that, but...
Yeah.
Harry, can I have some more... audio in my headphones? After not as much as what
put,
we had to
put more
beginning.
Snare in the headphones.
Check. Okay, yeah, we're good now. Sorry.
Now, we are back. We had a great break. I had a great break. So, at the end of the year, for those who didn't hear it, you know, I get 2 weeks off from work. And so, I take it because the first week is all full of holiday stuff. And I run into that break, I'm tired and exhausted, and like that CRISPR episode, I remember was so tired. And then the second week, I get so bored. About Wednesday, I'm like, I can't wait to get back. I got into Slack, into the research team, and said, I can't wait to get back. I slept 12 hours every day. It was great. My natural sleep cycle is apparently 2 a.m. to 1 p.m. I walked out. Stone visited us from Georgia, Superfan Stone, our social media director, flew on a plane for the first time up to see all of us. We had a lot of weekend shenanigans. And then I walked out and I looked at him and I go, Stone, this is the best I'm going to feel for 365 days.
It's all downhill from here.
I had to get up at 4:30 the next morning for work. I've had a combined 6 hours in the last 2 days. I grabbed an hour nap today, so I am a little fresh. And thank you, V8 Energy Drinks. Let me tell you, yeah, you have this coffee, but let me tell you, the V8 Energy Drink powered by green tea, you get 2 servings of vegetables and energy. It's great. I drink a can before every show. That's why I'm so peppy.
Yeah, but you break your fast when you do that, you know?
Fast.
Yeah. If you're doing intermittent fasting, you only eat for, like, if you're not eating for 20 but only eating for the 4, it breaks it because you get, you know, take a caloric intake. If you just do black coffee, you're fine.
Now, you are drinking coffee provided by Craig DaCosta.
Yes.
Death Wish Coffee.
Yes.
And Harry, just smelling it, got high.
Yeah, I've done this episode already. Like,
I'm catching a secondhand buzz over here.
I'm seeing into the future.
What is this coffee?
It's a Death Wish coffee. It's the world's it's rated as the world's strongest caffeinated coffee in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is very smooth. It's not bitter. It's just it's got great end notes. I love this coffee.
If you have superpowers, you will be able to harness them with this. It's 100% organic.
Yeah, I like it. It's not disturbing my stomach, and you guys are moving too slow,
which is most important. Yeah, you're like, come on,
let's go.
I did a podcast over the break, and having done this for so long, having worked in radio, you know, I started my career in 2004, and worked there for 4 years. Did politics, came back, and I've been in radio for the last 5 years. And then doing this for almost 7 years, you have a clock in your head. Mm-hmm. There's a beat. My beat when I'm doing the show is bump, 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 bump. That's the pace that we're working at. Please keep up. And so, you know, I go and I do other shows and it's bump, bump, bump. And I start to go, this is, I can't have this. I'm going to take this show over. Like our friends, I did a podcast called Friends Against Government.
Mm-hmm.
Do the acronym.
I don't want to. I'd like to keep the job that I don't have right now.
And so great conversation with Bird and Carr. It was a lot of fun. Go check out the Friends Against Government podcast. And I about 5 minutes in, I think they listen to my intro. I think they forget my last name. They say Chris from We Are Libertarians. And about halfway through, I was like, I'm just going to take this over now. This is my show now.
Yeah.
I'm like Alexander Haig. I'm ready.
It was a great listen to, though, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They're fun guys. And they really did listen to me. They You listen to their shows after, and they really did take my 7 suggestions to be a better podcaster. So a lot of people ask me how to do podcasting, and go check out the Chris Spangle Show. I have several podcasts about podcasting. You can go check those out.
It's pretty meta.
Yeah.
Very.
The other good interview was Hody's.
His debate?
Yeah.
Trisha Stewart?
Yeah, sorry, the debate. Yeah, that was amazing.
Our friend Trisha Stewart hosted a debate between our buddy Hody, mm-hmm. who is our lead researcher. He runs the researcher team. We have a research team. If you're bored and you want to join us, send me or Hody a message. And Hody hosts daily episodes. And Hody debated Larkin Rose over whether or not one should vote. And Hody and I have been talking about a debate format, and he really enjoyed that and figured mm-hmm. some stuff out, and so we're going to do more of that. Because one of the things that I've been thinking about, and we had a lot of conversations this week. We saw each other 2 or 3 times this weekend. I was reflecting on my favorite periods of the show, because we're on like the 5th generation of co-hosts, you know, and I'm always recruiting co-hosts. I had lunch today with a person that I'd like to join. You know, we've been gifted by Craig DaCosta, Jason Doolittle, and Anthony Velazza with ATR 2100 microphones, Audio Technica 2100. They make fantastic microphones, USB microphones. And we've got several of those, and I'm giving those to the daily host to upgrade that equipment. And they did that through our Amazon wish list, and we thank those guys for making us sound good. I take pride in this show sounding really good, and I don't want the dailies to have a different level of quality. So I'm very picky, because I think if you can't hear it clearly, then you don't care. Like, if you turn onto a podcast and it's just like, it's slow, it doesn't mm-hmm. sound good, I'm not going to waste your time. You give us hours a week, and I'm going to respect that. So
they sound like they're in a wind tunnel.
Yes, and so thank you to those guys for helping make it possible. But you know, I was reflecting on some of the best periods, and Tad and I had a drunken conversation at a bar.
Well, you were drunk. I was completely
sober. Completely sober. I was gone. Mm-hmm. Three sheets to the wind, high on breadsticks.
You were. I don't know.
I had huffed too much Afrin, and
I tell you what, it was between you. It was nonstop, just shooting yourself up the nose with whatever the hell that is. I want to say it's something legal. I hope so.
So Stone came into town, and I decided to set up a dinner Saturday night for a bunch of the local co-hosts. Just, hey, let's get together and meet Stone and have fun. And then we went out. We took him to church, if his mom's listening. And then we so Tad and I were at a bar called Kilroy's here in Indianapolis, and we were talking about tension. You know, not. I think the period with Gina and Greg in 2013 was a really great period of the show because Gina was a liberal who mm-hmm. wanted to be a libertarian and had a lot of questions. Greg was a conservative and a Republican who had a lot of questions about libertarianism. And then there was me who had been involved for a long time, and it was us. It was kind of like a conversation about all these topics from those three points of view. And so I really kind of want to get back to some of that creative tension. And so I'm bringing in some co-hosts to have that same perspective. Like, I don't know politics. I'm not an expert, but I'm going to be the voice of the listener, the person going, hey, wait a minute. And I didn't understand that. Please stop.
You got to get the banter ball bouncing. And,
exactly. Right. You know? Yeah. So a lot of last year was me trying to figure out my voice, doing mm-hmm. this on my own and figuring out my voice. And I had gotten lazy with the very talented Greg Lenz, who was a very intelligent person. And I had to get my shit together. And I feel like I really did. But, you know, it got a little long winded and, mm-hmm. you know, and hopefully we won't continue that tradition, but I'm not going to make any promises. I love to talk. That's why I do this. So I forget what I was talking about. So
we were
talking about that
at
period.
The bar,
at the bar.
You were wasted. There's probably, I'm that's surprised I'm you even remember the conversation. Sorry,
well,
stuttering.
I was drunk all weekend, and then I have not slept. I've had 3 hours of sleep the last two nights after a long rest. And so I'm a mess. I'm like a toddler. I am a toddler. Without my routines of being of doing this and going to work and then exercising mm-hmm. and like without that daily routine, that 16-hour grind of a day every single day,
you're a lost
six
puppy
days
dog.
Away. I couldn't sleep. I had too much energy.
Sometimes I forget you get up at 4:30, so now I've got someone to message at 4:30 in the morning.
I usually get up between 5:30 and 6. So there are occasional days where I'm like, I'm going to sleep a little longer.
I'll just message you at 4:30. Make sure.
Yeah, and that's fine. My
call you.
My do not disturb doesn't turn on until quarter. I'll
FaceTime you at 4:30.
No. And so moments of rest like that are great because it gives time for you to catch up and for us to reflect on what we're doing. I spoke to the co-hosts and posted that for our patrons. If you're a patron, you can go listen to kind of our working mission for 2019 and what we're going to focus on. And you can check that out. We certainly have a direction and a purpose. And it's a big reason why you should support us financially. We lost in a single day 4 patrons and 26 a month because of people leaving Patreon. And I certainly understand why you have an issue with Patreon, but there are many other ways to support the show, which you can find at wearelibertarians.com/support. And if you pull your financial support of this program, we have to start pulling programs, and we have a really big year that we're working on next year. So we do need your support. And we're going to really – I feel like I kind of have the vibe that I want to go for, the goals that I want to work for. We're going to fine-tune it this year. And the goal for the last 4 years has been to get ready for next year.
Right.
Next year's prime time. The presidential elections are already underway, but next year is when a lot of new people really start paying attention. We create the most libertarians in an election year, mm-hmm. and this show talks to regular people as opposed to libertarians.
Correct.
The goal of what we do is to talk to normal people and mm-hmm. answer their questions and explain libertarianism in a way that they talk. It's like you're sitting around the table here talking with each other. And, you know, we need shows that cater to libertarians, but that's not our mission. Our mission is to go out and create new libertarians. So it is incredibly important that you continue to support our work. If you sign up via PayPal or send a check or Bitcoin or whatever way you support us, then let me know and I'll make sure that you get access to the bonus content. But it is important that you, we've lost about 100 a month because of the Patreon stuff, that we talked about in that last episode. Mm-hmm. So that's a hit. That's what we pay for audio hosting. That's what we pay for probably all of our news subscriptions. Like there, so I have to start making choices if we continue to drop. And, that means less availability for you, the audience. If you like listening on SoundCloud, that costs a certain amount a month. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so this isn't free. This is supported by our listeners. And we do this because we want to grow the libertarian movement, and we want you to engage in it. Feel free to get involved in it. We want you to get something out of it. And if you feel like you get something out of the show, then give something back. It doesn't have to be money, just maybe a share, or you have a talent, or you have, I don't know. I don't
spread
know.
Spread the word.
What yeah. you're good at. Yeah. yeah spread yeah. the word.
Tell friends, family.
Yeah. So, show us what you're good
at. Like, subscribe.
Exactly
download.
Right. Yes. Just do it. Don't wait for my permission. Ask for my forgiveness. That's what I, you know, Brian Nichols was like, can I promote We Are Libertarians on the stage at the Young Americans for Liberty conference? I was like, Brian, you don't need to ask. You Brian Nichols, who hosts a show on the network, mm-hmm. has my blessing to use our name, but I appreciate his asking. So, so how was your break? How about you, Harry?
Let's see. So far, it's going good, but it's... I have enjoyed the extra time, but I have found myself in the car ranting to myself a lot of time because I haven't had you to rant to.
You don't realize how therapeutic this is until you don't do it for a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
When I had laryngitis last year and couldn't do the show for like a solid month, I was tense.
Yeah. And everyone was a target.
The cats were plugging their ears. I'm like, shut yeah. up, old man.
Well, I couldn't make a noise.
Yeah, and everything was the target. I was at work and just like getting it. Anyone said anything, it was like, boom. I was like, you know what? And I was just like hitting them with, you know, just beating people up beside the head with facts and like, or just like.
Gas prices.
Yeah, gas prices. Just telling how much I just love the gas prices right now. As a rotary driver, you know, with gas prices getting as low as they are.
What is a rotary driver?
Rotary driver is someone that drives a car powered by a rotary engine. So either the RX-7, RX-3, the Cosmo, or the RX-8. There's some other whoever.
Isn't that like a fan?
No,
like
it's
a turbine.
It's a motor. It's close to a turbine, but think
what's
of it.
The difference between your motor and my motor?
Pistons.
Pistons. Yeah, yours have pistons that go up and down, go boing 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 boing.
Right.
While my motor is a triangle. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Gotta throw up the diamond. All right.
Right.
And it spins inside of like a little penis
Illuminati.
Shell thing.
Yep.
Okay. It spins inside of a peanut, and it does that to create power in a very very small space. So it takes
high revving.
Yeah. High revving. So it takes about a 1.3 liter of displacement and makes, you know, like my the RX-8 does about 200 plus horsepower, but it was a 1.3 liter motor. You don't have a 1.3.
I understood none of that. And I
the
don't,
listeners
I regret asking.
And well, the other thing is like it's mechanically efficient, but not efficient on fuel. So
right.
It does about 13 miles to the gallon, 8 miles to the gallon if you're really just slamming it. Okay.
Christopher Thomas on the chat. Nice thing about rotary. After a few years, you get a new engine.
Hey, any high compression, most high compression, high performance motors, you do that too. It's just the one thing with the benefit of the RX of the rotary motor. It's you can do it in your driveway, which most of these modern engines you really can't, or you don't have the skill to.
Right.
And if you treat your rotary correctly and do all your maintenance, you won't have that issue. So either you just have to know how to take care of a high performing motor. If you can't, do not apply.
You realize we're talking to the guy who lost his wheels in his parking lot.
Yeah, I do realize that. Yeah, the guy who lost his wheels.
How long have I been telling you, Harry, that I need to change my brakes?
Almost a year now. Almost like I think we're 2 months out for a year. Just driving yeah. on, just pat.
Just, yeah, just, oh, just.
Do you remember the pajama party that Caitlin had that we went to, and then we went to the karaoke bar,
afterwards.
And Aaron and Hannah were in the back, and then going, I think your rotaries, something's grinding. It's probably your brakes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get to it.
So you're going to need new rotors. You're going to need everything.
Oh, I'm going to need the whole shebang. Yeah.
You still haven't done it?
Well, I've been meaning to get with him and set up a time at this place and do it myself.
Yeah, go to DIY Garage on 42nd and Shadeland, and we can put it on the lift and show him how to do his own brakes.
I know how to do my own brakes. I've done it before. I just don't have the space or tools or equipment.
No one believes you that you've done your own brakes.
Yeah, I have. I absolutely did.
Yeah, no one here.
You realize I was a man at one time. I have become a soft, fleshy version of a man.
No one here believes that.
Back in the day, I worked at hardware stores and did construction. And
you were a genuine Al Borland, were you not?
I was. I was Wilson, Al Borland, and Tim Allen all rolled into one.
Yeah, I don't
and
believe it.
And what about Norm Abram? Were you Norm
we will
Abram?
Find out when if we finally get your car on the lift, because I'm just going to be quiet.
I was doing woodworking in the garage. I was like that, you know, Saturday morning on PBS, yeah. That New England.
That's Norm Abram.
Yeah, was that who that is?
Yeah, that's Norm Abram. Yeah.
Yeah. Bob Vila.
Bob Vila.
I used to watch Bob Vila. And then they gave it to the blonde guy, and I have no care for him.
No. Nope.
No, thank you.
I prefer Holmes on Holmes. I love Mike Holmes.
I figured you'd be more of a Stacey David type of guy.
I do like Stacey David Gears. Yeah, I do like it. Well, especially the episode you said.
You just
episode
call
with
him
Ken.
Gay and
no, it's Stacey David.
You don't know Stacey David?
No.
Come on.
Heck yeah. Yeah, that's one of my... Stacey David. Yeah, old school, like a great mechanic.
Build hot rods and shit. And
Anything. Get his hands on anything and just build stuff. That's why he calls his show Gears, because if you know it's got gears, he's working on it.
Right.
You know?
All right, let's jump into it.
Sorry, that's my alarm to brush Gunther's teeth. I apologize.
Aw.
Yeah.
She's a pistol. I heard she had a BLT sandwich.
Yes. Just mostly bacon, though. She took the sandwich apart and then just ate the bacon out of it and then left everything else.
Well, that's the only way to eat a BLT.
She's like, well, this is just, what is this stuff?
So I see she's going keto.
Yeah. Oh, God. I hope she doesn't turn into Bittner.
Oh, no, no, no.
All right, so we got an hour to do this. The president is going to speak at 9 o'clock, and we're going to tune into that. And, you know, I don't want the episodes to be too long, so we may do the two episodes or a daily or something. We'll figure it out. But we got an hour to do this, so I want to talk about the Green New Deal. And I think instead of jumping into the Green New Deal, we have fantastic notes from Sam Schultz. And I want to get to that and explain what the Green New Deal is, but I want you to listen to it and understand it. I think in the way that I kind of it was set up for me. So over the break, I enjoy a program called No Agenda, and I mentioned this before. It's John C. Dvorak, a tech writer, and Adam Curry, the father of podcasting. Just two curmudgeonly guys talk about politics. They find their audience crowdsources their clips. They find amazing stuff. They unearth these little gold nuggets of content. I think I've played a couple before. And I don't know if they're climate change deniers, but they're definitely, and this is something that I would definitely agree with, they find the propaganda around it because their show is based around deconstructing media. They find the propaganda around climate change to be a problem, and I do too. And
they're going to have a field day with this then.
Yes. Now, I am not a climate change denier. I think it is undeniable to look at the polar caps and say that they're melting, or Malta, or the fact that 180 days in Venice, they have planks that you have to walk on. And, you know, sea levels are definitely rising. Now,
only in the sucky places.
Yes, and the reason that this is happening is, for instance, you burn for palm oil. They have to burn palm trees, and so all of that ash and soot lands on the polar caps, and that black soot then melts the ice caps faster. So I do think that man plays some role in climate change. I am a long way from fully understanding the issue, let alone giving you a solution, but. I know propaganda and bullshit when I see it. And that is a lot of what this episode is about. It is not about giving you a solution. We will get there, all right? And I think a lot of it has to do with the free market and how we respond and innovation and allowing entrepreneurs to create new technologies that will solve this problem. Human beings have an uncanny knack for survival. We're very good at figuring out a way not to die.
Some of us.
Yeah, some of us. Yes. Yeah,
the ones who are still here.
Right. Yeah. If you live in Florida, you're fucked.
Listen, or are we fucked? Because if you think about it, people in Florida are just dealing with the danger.
Right.
You know?
So
at all times.
So what is really...
Some like haters?
The state of Florida.
Oh. Right.
But yeah, keep going. Sorry.
All right. So I want to talk about the manipulative aspect because I heard this over break and I wanted to play it for you. And I didn't realize that the Green New Deal would turn into the big deal that it was. So all this is very fortuitous in terms of its timing. And it is scary, scary stuff. It is
Keep going, faster.
Harry is literally rocking in his chair.
He's redlining right now to get back to the motor analogies.
He is pinning. He's about to explode. So the CBC did a they have a show called The Current, and they did something called Activist Urges World War II Level Global Effort to Fight Climate Change. Now, this is a woman who is a clinical psychologist that they're interviewing. Her name is Margaret Klein Salomon, the former clinical psychologist and founder and director of the Climate Mobilization. TAD, do you think that a clinical psychologist would be good at creating persuasive, some might even call manipulative, arguments and phrasing for her cause?
I would hope so. And I would expect nothing less.
Right.
Especially if you've started a foundation or whatever she runs. I'm not familiar with her work, but
right.
I'm sure I'll get a laugh out of it here in a minute.
Klein Salomon, her organization calls for an immediate ban of all new fossil fuel infrastructure and a 10-year timeline for retiring the fossil fuel infrastructure that we do have. Okay. So
sounds very, sounds very reasonable and
very close to what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has said she wants. So this is what she is fighting for. And again, I admit that I am stealing these clips directly from the No Agenda show. I give them all credit and thank them for doing all of the hard work. So you don't have to call me a thief. But as in radio, if you steal from me, you've stolen twice. So this is her opinion of all how we should handle all this. Well, isn't this unfortunate?
S-O-B.
You have to test everything before you start the show.
Can't even steal stuff correctly.
I know. I can't even do it right. I'm just a pathetic loser.
We are calling for a 10-year crash transition to zero emissions plus drawdown and attempt to achieve full spectrum sustainability across issues. The idea being this is not a problem. We are too late in the game for gradualism, right, to incrementally reduce emissions or for individualism, right? The idea that I'll take care of my emissions, you take care of your emissions, and so forth. What we envision is a rapid transition of our entire economy and society with all hands on deck, as most recently happened in our history during World War II. So, for example, some of the policies that would come from a World War II scale climate mobilization would be the immediate ban of all new fossil fuel infrastructure and a 10-year timeline for retiring the fossil fuel infrastructure that we do have, coupled, because we want to keep the lights on, with a massive scale-up of renewable energy. So large government investment creating millions of jobs to both reduce demand through things like winterizing homes and just transform our energy system to renewable. We also, mm-hmm. I mean, we also have policies in agriculture, transportation, and industry that we promote, but that's the basic scope.
This is very similar to what Ocasio-Cortez is pushing with the Green New Deal, and they want to force every single home, all 136 million American homes, plus every single business, building, business park, warehouse, to winterize. And now, Harry, you looked horrified as we listened to that.
Yeah, because to me, hearing that, right? One, it was just too dumb. But the thing is, I started thinking of the dead bodies this will create. Because a lot of that fossil fuel infrastructure keeps things on. Yes, keeps lights on. But the backups to all of our power grids, the generators that keeps ICUs on, they're run by, gas and diesel generators, right? Yeah. So things that keep people alive, it's fossil fuels that does that, okay?
All those buzzwords
If you break it down, Harry, let me tell you, in 2017, this was the United States energy consumption by fuel. Petroleum was 37%.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas was 29%. Mm-hmm. So 40% is oil.
Right.
Natural gas is 29%. Coal is 14%. Mm-hmm. Nuclear is 9%. And renewable energy is only 11%. Now, in 2016, it was 12.2%. So we went down a percent.
But work is classified as a renewable.
And now, let me tell you.
It's probably more hydro than anything.
And this is from Wikipedia. And you can look it up there. I just looked up energy consumption in the United States and found this. So biofuel is 22% of that. Other biomass is 24%. So that means wood. So burning wood is essentially the which creates carbon emission.
The worst carbon emission. No one's got scrubbers on their chimneys in their houses.
Right. Hydro is 24%. Wind is 20%. And solar is 6%. And geothermal is 2.2%. No. So we're talking about wind and solar only being, and geothermal and hydro, you know, we're talking about 5% is currently of our... The problem that I have with these people is they're so unrealistic. They don't understand the economy as a whole or the intricacy of all of this.
Correct. And they don't understand that they, trying to fix this issue, they have like made it worse in some issues.
Right.
In some areas. Like, well, we want to encourage people to ride their bicycles so they take up bike, you make bike lanes and take up regular car lanes. So you got trucks and all these cars idling, which they're at their least efficient while they're just sitting there idling in traffic. You know, most newer cars have three catalytic converters. It's not that much bad crap coming out of the back end of a lot of these cars.
Yeah.
Especially when they're moving at a speed or at a pace.
Yeah, and USA Today had a story this week about how bike lanes are a complete waste of money for a city. Yeah. And in our city...
I've never understood it, especially on the north... You can't use them half year. Nobody rides a bike in the wintertime.
Right. Right.
All it does is clog up traffic.
Yeah.
Here in town, they're building the Red Line, which they're going to destroy College Avenue, which is the main thoroughfare. They're going to close all these businesses.
Destroyed New York Street already.
You know, they built all these bike lanes because young professionals like biking and mass transit. No,
get a Peloton then.
Young professionals like low taxes, more personal freedom. They like restaurants, trendy restaurants, and they like murals that they can take a picture, like the Wings in Nashville.
Yeah.
They like shit like that.
Yeah.
Like they don't
for the
they
gram.
Don't,
like the red couch.
Yeah. They
right.
They want the gram.
What is that place? The Punch Bowl Social.
The Punch Bowl Social.
Yeah. Punch Bowl Social. Yeah. But the other thing is with it is there's so much housing going on in downtown Indianapolis, they're not going to live up there. They're just going to move downtown.
Yeah.
The place that I work downtown, they got rid of the parking lot behind us, and they're building a high-rise apartments in there.
You know, meanwhile, the renewable transportation system that young professionals are glomming onto are the scooters,
and they're shitting on it.
Right?
Because you can't control it.
Right?
I mean, it's literally chaos.
Mm-hmm. How do you unionize the scooter industry? You can't.
Correct. Yeah, and that's the thing. Is like the scooters, which are electric, which a scooter lane. I was going to say, like, instead of a bike lane, the scooter lane seems more. You know, it's easier.
There's easier fixes if you just get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, get out of the way.
You'll figure out a way to move people.
Right.
People
walk.
So let's return to our friend for some. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing is like this idea of the saying like coal is like puts out too many bad emissions. No, it doesn't. Most stuff, when people look at a coal power plant, they see like the
steam
coming out. They see steam. That's freaking water vapor being pushed.
Anything white coming out of one of those is steam.
Yeah. Now the ash bits, yes, that is like that's the waste emission coming out of coal. But once they bury that, they have a way to get rid of that. It's fine. It's perfectly fine. They're not destroying things for it.
So let's move on to this next clip from Margaret Klein Solomon. Hope I'm pronouncing her name right. I apologize if not.
We are calling for a 10-year crash transition to zero emissions plus drawdown and attempt to achieve full spectrum sustainability across issues. The idea being
now I'm playing the same clip again. My apologies.
Yeah, I was gonna. But
what you really get out of that is a command and control economy, a wartime economy, which, as we know from the great book Crisis and the Leviathan, is the greatest way to grow the size and scope of government. I rewatched John Adams over break on HBO, which if you've not seen, you must at least get HBO, go for a month and watch this. It's mandatory. And you see Alexander Hamilton trying to use war with the French in the first two administrations of this country to try and grow the size of the central government. It erases individualism. It erases the government that you know now. And so what they really want to do with all of this, as you will hear as we get into the weeds, is to control every piece of energy that is the entire energy sector. They want to control all industry. They want to control your home. They want to control the light bulbs you use. They want to control healthcare.
By control, you mean tax, basically. Right. I mean, no, they literally want to tax carbon coming out of your mouth.
But so this is. But the problem with a lot of this is the small thinking in this. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh no, I agree.
How do you feed a?
I don't even think there is any thinking.
I think we're gonna top out at 9 billion people, but we currently have 7.5 billion people on this planet, and it should support 1 to maybe 2. And we do that because of GMOs. We do that because of farming and advances in technology. Advancements in technology are created by entrepreneurs and the free market. Mm-hmm. But listen to how she plans on feeding people.
Well, a great example is the Victory Gardens. So during World War II, 40% of American vegetables were grown at home in the front and backyard by the people that ate them, right? We can farm our lawns and have community farms which increases, you know, local food security, and also, you know, you don't have emissions from transportation. But more generally, programs like transitioning industry, right? So the United States banned the production of...
If you didn't hear, we're going to control the food supply and all that, then you might want to rewind and re-listen.
You're
going to
grow your own McHamburgers.
Right.
New consumer automobiles, because they said we need all of that automobile factory capacity.
During war, we need to deal with automobiles.
To create our tanks and planes and machine guns. And so no more consumer car production. Period. It's a fundamentally different mentality when you get into the mode of we face an existential threat. Everything is on the line. And you know, so the government is going to do everything that it can. The government should spend without limit to save as much life as possible.
The problem is spending without limit creates death.
What is?
Yeah.
There's so many thoughts. I'm just trying to grasp onto one of them that to hunker down on. Like, does she believe that? Only this is only for America, or does she not realize that we're a country of 300 million people?
And right. She's talking about America, but she's really talking about the world. Global Green New Deal is global. Jill Stein ran on it. The Green Party has taken over. Germany has taken over all these different
places. Well, good luck getting the actual polluters, and which China's double the output of us, China, and India's half of what
China,
we are.
But they're also dirty. Brazil, Venezuela, all these countries that are just dirty.
You're going to inadvertently collapse the developed world for the developing world.
And it's going to be even worse.
Yeah. Right.
Most of the developing world is going to go right back to the Dark Ages. It's going to get worse.
So what this woman is advocating is, like World War II, we need the government, because we face an existential crisis, we need the government to command and control every factory, every business, we need you to grow food at home because we need the farms to retool, and we're going to stop food production. We're going to stop production at the factories, the warehouses in which you work, all the shipping that takes place with trucks, that will come to a halt. What do you think happens when you stop the food supply, you stop the transportation industry, you stop the energy industry, when you use the government to completely end commerce in the United States of America, which is the thing that keeps the world afloat?
We're going to have solar-powered airplanes.
No, it's going to be...
Who's going to invent that? The government?
It's going to be Dark Ages. I hope you got your sword and horses now, okay?
Right.
Get your fiefdoms ready.
Horses... They excrete things.
That is a renewable resource that I have to burn fuel my house.
You will not be eating meat.
I love the keyword.
Oh, I'm eating meat.
No, you will not be allowed to.
I'm sorry. Once Lawrence starts invading other counties to get our meat supply, I'm getting meat.
You're not going to have a backyard meat grow.
I watched Jericho. Have you guys seen Jericho?
Yes. Yes.
On Netflix.
I don't know what Netflix is.
A nuclear bomb goes off, and Kansas is safe, and it's this little town.
It's Indiana Jones in a refrigerator?
Yes, and It is an absolutely amazing show. It's like the number one. Stone turned me onto it. It's like the number one.
What? So you're tardy to the Jericho Party,
dude? I cannot wait for you people to leave so I can finish watching the beginning of the second season.
Okay, right.
It is fantastic, and you see, like, okay, this is when the world has to it leaves technology behind and has to figure out how to exist.
Except Texas,
the preppers win. Let's just put it that way.
And Texas,
right?
So she's under the impression that every omission is bad.
All right. So which I don't is, know about you. I don't know about you. Right? I'm tech. I'm not grow. I kill plants. I can barely keep.
Right.
You know, the only reason I have grass is because I pay somebody to give me to make sure I have grass.
Right.
Okay.
No. You need to stop being a productive citizen. And you need to start figuring out how to just provide for your existence. You get to use no technology because you can't power that, because we're going to only allow you to use 5% of the energy production in the United States.
It seems to me it's more of a population issue if the only thing you're worried about is the end result than the intake.
So if you don't now see the complete Trojan horse that this is, maybe you'll see it in some of the details later of what's being proposed by the various groups pushing the Green New Deal. But let's deal with the existential threat. Have you guys heard of climate grief?
I still don't even know what the existential threat is, other than temperature change go up a little bit.
Yeah, we lose Boston and San Francisco.
We're not an ice age. We're not an ice age.
Right. Well, that's sort of the thing. You're going.
There's a boogeyman.
Technically,
out there.
We're still in an ice age.
Did you see?
I know.
Did you see the news? The NBC News piece that was floating around the last few days from 2007 that said New York City would be underwater by 2015. You know how
I
many?
I believe in 1996, Al Gore had a chart that said the sea level would 9 inches or something or whatever the hell it was. 16 inches or whatever the hell it was.
Global cooling was the concern in the 1970s. The problem is that you are taking legitimate science and making it and stretching
your narrative
to a ridiculous place. We'll see in either later in this episode or next episode Trump do this with immigration. Go ahead.
And then trying to use science to push everything, but then reject the science that does anything.
Right.
Like, don't get me wrong, it's like coal's clean, coal's fine, but nuclear power is safer and cleaner.
Right.
You know?
Think of the technology advancements that we've seen in everything since the 1970s when you had Chernobyl, the Love Island incident.
Chernobyl, that was an accident that was a crappy country doing stupid stuff. Three Mile Island is non-existent. It was a pointless things. There's been other actual meltdowns inside the United States.
I mean, Fukushima is a very bad event, but have we seen significant global meltdowns because of Fukushima? No, we haven't.
Well, that was all because basically building it next to the sea on a highly active fault.
Seems like a bad
highly
idea.
Active
yeah, I mean,
fault.
It,
yeah, yeah,
it, it's not, it wasn't, probably not the best idea.
Correct, but the thing is, because of how radiation works, it's kind of gets diluted. It's fine. It's fine.
Tell those fish that.
So let's talk about climate grief.
Fish are fine.
Listen to this NBC report on
climate grief.
On climate grief,
I'm sad already.
To get people to buy this Trojan horse, you need to make
you
them
need
afraid.
To manufacture a
crisis,
a seasonal depression year round.
You don't have Hitler, you don't have Al Qaeda, so you have to manufacture something over a long period of time and make people afraid. People were afraid of Al Qaeda, so they gave up their Fourth Amendment rights to the United States government. They gave up First Amendment rights. They gave up a lot. And so now they want to give up the economy because of climate grief. So here is NBC talking about this, talking to a college student.
If you pay attention to climate change news these days, it's pretty distressing.
I don't know if I'm hopeful that we will avoid climate catastrophe. It seems like that window of time is rapidly closing.
The vocal fry.
Marcella Mulholland is 21 years old. She's a college student from Orlando. For a few years now, she's been feeling angst over the climate.
Choosing to pay attention and to be aware in the world at this time is like a deeply painful daily exercise and definitely anxious, like totally, and just really sad about the world. But yeah.
Now there's a name for what she's feeling. Climate grief.
Climate grief is such a thing, and I'm glad that they there's a label for it now, and people are working on how to process climate grief because it's so real.
I asked Marcella, when did she first feel climate grief?
So the first time I became aware of like climate change as like a severe existential threat to humanity and to all of life on Earth was my freshman year of college when I took a sustainability class. And I was really sad for a while. And I was just really mad that I had lived in the world for like 18 years and had never... like no one ever told me that we were like rapidly going towards this catastrophe.
I bet she drives in a car everywhere.
Everywhere.
Uses a phone made of cobalt.
No, I'm just talking about driving in a car as an existential threat that she'll die in a car wreck.
It's much more.
Yeah,
likely.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to be scared of something, car wreck is what you need to be scared of.
So my 5-year-old niece goes, Uncle, I said something about global warming. She goes, Uncle Tiss, what's global warming? And I go, don't worry, you're going to hear all about it when you go to school. And it's already started in kindergarten.
Got to indoctrinate them
now,
early.
I want to be...
Implement false memories.
I want 2019 to be the moment when this audience is the change in the world that we want to see. We want to make fun of this person, right? We want to make fun of Ocasio-Cortez. We want to make fun of all of these people. But we have to respect that this girl... and the people who are going through climate grief, these are sick people who have been manipulated.
She's a victim of higher education.
Exactly. And so we have to respect that person's feelings and understand that while it seems silly to us, this is a person that's genuinely feeling this. There may be somebody in the audience listening to my voice going, I feel that. I connect with that. And so you have to be careful when you're talking about this stuff not to mock and be too hard on people, because this is a person who just... is listening to authorities, and authorities are teaching her something that to us who have lived a life and aren't 20, we go, what? So what is the definition of climate grief? Here is one of the manipulators defining it for us.
Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt are the founders of the Good Grief Network. They held a session at the conference on how to deal with climate grief. Before the session, I asked Laura, what exactly is climate grief?
Climate grief is the gut punch that you feel when you realize that your imagined future may not exist anymore. When you realize that what we've done to the planet will not make tomorrow look like yesterday.
I asked Amy what she hoped people would get out of the session.
Tools and community and reminders that they're not alone.
So is this the climate depression session?
That's Kelton, one of the 17 people who showed up at the session.
Here comes Creighton.
Amy and Laura set up low-to-the-ground chairs in a circle in the grass.
Low-to-the-ground.
The group was surrounded by tall trees and desert mountains. Sitting under the clear blue sky, not a cloud in sight. It was incredibly quiet. The only sound was a little bit of wind passing by.
All right, now let me say... how many libertarians have bought into Stansbury's research or some of the stuff that Ron Paul talks about or Peter Schiff? How many people?
Buy gold!
Now, I, after watching Jericho, am going to become a prepper because those are the people that survive. But at the same time, how many libertarians over the last 20 years, specifically the last decade? I personally took out a bunch of credit cards in 2008 because I was positive I would never have to pay that back. The global financial system was coming to an end. I needed to buy gold. I'll just spend this money, buy a bunch of prepper stuff, because I was sure in 2008 that the world was coming to an end.
Yeah, in 2012.
And
Mayan
so
calendar, man.
We have to be really careful as libertarians that we're not mocking other people for stuff that we do and that we're not accidentally participating in the fear tactics of people. Listen, I agree with Ron Paul. I agree with Peter Schiff on almost everything, and there is a bill due. When you are the inflation, when you inflate all that money away, when you print money, there is a bill that comes due. But at the same time, there's a lot of paranoia in the libertarian movement about global economic issues, whereas these people are looking at global climate issues. So let's be respectful because we do it too. So
at least there's something tangible with the
right
with the
there's economics
with the economics
right.
All right.
But that's our science, and they're looking at their science, right?
Right. I just get very upset at people telling me about how we are destroying the environment as they live in a place that's all they do.
Right.
California is a desert. It should be a desert. Leave it a desert.
Right.
Move. Oh, I love the climate here. Get out. You're destroying the environment being there.
Right.
If you just moved, I don't know, spread the heck out, it'd be fine. You'd be fine. Just spread out. Some of y'all move to North Carolina, Ohio.
Maybe. Stay away from Indiana.
Stay away from Indiana.
So if you're dealing Michigan. With if you're dealing with climate grief, here's how to find the road to recovery.
Maryland.
A couple years ago, Amy and Laura started working on a 10-step program to deal with collective grief, things like mass shootings and climate change.
All right, 10 steps to psychosocial resilience.
They shared their steps at the Uplift session.
1, accept the problem and its severity. 2,
just accept.
Acknowledge that I am part of the problem as well as the solution.
You're Step bad. 3, practice sitting with uncertainty. Step 4, confront my own mortality and the mortality of all.
5, feel my feelings. 6,
how do you
inner work.
Step,
how do you feel?
I don't know. Somebody just got really, really bored on that one. They're right. Like, I'm going to feel my feelings.
Although I
that one in.
I will say, Tad, you do a lot of avoiding of your feelings. So maybe there is some.
Well, you have to have feelings to actually feel them.
That's a good point.
Yeah. 7, take breaks and rest as needed. Step 8, develop take awareness naps. Of brain patterns and perception.
9, show up. 10, reinvest into problem-solving efforts.
John Wooden is rolling in his grave right now.
Now, let's jump back from that NBC report on climate grief, and let's play a clip from The Current, the CBC, the Canadian broadcasting piece that we were playing earlier. This is children and what they're drawing. These are kindergartners, first graders, second graders in Canadian schools. Listen to this.
My name's Deborah Harford. I'm the executive director of the Adaptation to Climate Change team at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver. A low-carbon, resilient future.
Yes, let's. They're playing the piano. They're joking around here, but let's pay attention to the choice of music.
I am. It's very hypnotic.
And the choice of music that you use to reinforce these points.
Is a beautiful one. A lot less noisy, polluting cars, filling up most of our urban downtown area.
Now, this is the future that she is outlining. Now, if we do the Green New Deal, as outlined earlier, this is the world that you can live in if you just submit and let command and control economies take
utopia.
Place. Close your eyes and just, especially if you're driving, because you're not going to want to live in this world, just wreck your car. Close your eyes and
listen.
Make sure
you put it in neutral so you're not putting out any emissions.
Future is a beautiful one. A lot less noisy, polluting cars filling up most of our urban downtown areas. More parks, more areas for kids to play, more places for people to grow food, more shared spaces, more places where people can come together and enjoy their environment.
I heard a very interesting presentation from a woman who works with small children recently, and so she asks them to draw. She says, if we carry on in how we're living in the world, what do you think the future looks like? And she said that without fail, they draw a world.
Fake ass pause.
In which everything's on fire, and everything is dead, and everyone is sick.
How does a child who is essentially an empty bucket start drawing that stuff? Well, let's listen to from that same report children talking about global warming, and I wonder where they got these ideas. Harry, yes.
I was just going to say, the world she's describing is McCordsville. She wants hardly any cars, people parked in their houses and their suburbs and their shared spaces. That's what she's describing. Is,
yes.
Is the suburbs in flyover country. I just want to point that out.
In capitalistic America, yes. Yeah. Right. All right. Here we go.
My name is Elizabeth Curran. I'm 10 years old. And
now, what is the effect of using children, Tad?
My feels hit you right in the feels.
Right.
They're the children of the future.
Right.
They're actually not. Robots
are. We need to do this for Gunther. You're a bad parent if you let down.
All to appeal to emotions.
First off, right. Gunther will be fine.
Right.
Have they provided one shred of hard data in this?
My name is Elizabeth Curran. I'm 10 years old, and I live in Winnipeg. Being a young person, what I find most concerning about climate change is that, like, animals can lose their homes like polar bears if the ice melts.
Here's a 10-year-old girl who thinks that her dog's going to die.
Why do we give a shit about what 10-year-olds think?
How many data tables has she read from a scientific journal?
I don't know. Polar bears are...
Her dog is going to die.
Did she say dog or polar bear? I can't hear.
We may have to eat that dog once we run out of meat.
Arthur, I am 9 years old. I live in Iqaluit.
How about we focus on some speech classes instead of all the
did
social...
Did he say Halloween?
I don't know.
It's scary because I live near the ocean. And if there's a glacier, that also will make the water go close to my house.
My name is Ben Bisaillon. I am 15 and I live in Montreal, Quebec. I think that it's time for the governments to do big things, but just because the governments are doing big things doesn't mean that people should stop doing small things, that everyone should just, you know, without necessarily sacrificing everything yet, just do what they can to reduce the footprint and help us not be doomed.
My name is Mia Testout. I'm 12 years old and I live in Winnipeg. The thing that scares me the most about climate change is literally everything. It's terrifying. It's kind of been pushed to the side, and it's just not knowing anything
I just have a generic fear of nothing specific. I've just been told to be afraid.
But it's the worst.
Kind of what scares me about it, and just knowing that it's going to kill us if we don't do anything, which we're not doing anything, that's the scary part to me.
Which is not true. The amount of new technologies, if you watch Vice, which covers this stuff all the time, the amount of new technologies being created all the time in the various industries to deal with renewable energy or making nuclear safer, we are doing things. The private sector is doing things. The people who create wealth are doing things. But you don't hear that because that's not the goal.
My name is Patrick. I'm 10 years old, and I was born in China, but now I live in Vancouver. Young children will experience far worse than the people living right now. It also scares me that floods, hurricanes, and other natural disasters are way more likely than in the past 5 years. I think grown-ups should think that we actually should make an impact and not just sit back and let it happen.
Swelling music.
We need an actual, like, meteorite or something to hit the Earth. Or another world war.
Maybe this is video, but listen to how long that music swells. Here's another girl, another college student. This is from something where AOC appeared with Bernie Sanders and Van Jones, and they were mad that she basically moved in and has become the face of this when, you know, he was the Green Czar under Obama and got kicked out for 9/11 truth. But this is, yeah, reasons is what he said. But the right just kicked me out. Fraternizing with 9/11 truthers, and they gotcha. Which this program has been accused of. So listen to Marcella and her concerns, as she has, as much of these children have done. They have taken normal weather patterns and applied them to climate change because that is the programming.
Are these local weather patterns more than likely?
Right. The weather patterns cause, as we did in the wildfire episode, go back and listen to the wildfire episode. Many of you did not. And then you will hear the ways that the federal government is completely inept at making sure that these events don't happen. Instead of blaming the people who are responsible, we blame climate change, as the governor of California did, which is not being called climate change anymore. It's not global warming. It was global cooling. Then it's global warming. Then it's climate change. Now it is pollution. And this was pushed by Arnold Schwarzenegger, who said, people don't understand climate change. They don't believe it. The brand is dead. Make it pollution. And so you've heard the Canadian prime minister say, you know, if people want to pollute, then they have to pay a price for that. There has to be a cap and trade system. So listen to Marcella as she blames a completely normal weather pattern, a tidal surge, on climate change and listen to the fear that it causes her.
Ella, I'm 21 years old and I was born and raised in South Florida. Growing up, dealing with hurricanes was a regular occurrence for me and my family. I remember being really little and feeling afraid because sometimes my dad would have to work during the storm. But it wasn't until my family moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, that I really became closely acquainted with the devastating impacts of sea level rise. We moved somewhere that's sometimes called the Venice of America, and it's well known for its beautiful waterways and coast. My family was lucky enough to live just one block away from the beach. But when we moved, I started to notice that every time a storm would hit, the street in front of my apartment would flood. And sometimes it would flood even when it wasn't raining. Local businesses would have to put out sandbags to stop the water from coming into the shores. My parents would have to move the cars up to higher ground for parking. And it was this weird dystopia where regular people were being forced to become experts in the ocean's tidal patterns and sea level rise.
Some
really bad days, the entrance to my apartment building would be blocked off from flooding. And at the time, I didn't know that any of this had to do with something called global climate change or sea level rise. I just knew that this was an everyday part of my family's life. Then I went to college and I learned that my personal...
Let me replay that.
...family's life. Then I went to college and I learned that...
Then I went to college.
My personal experiences with flooding and with hurricanes were just warning signs of more drastic changes to come for Florida and for the rest of the world. Scientists predict that by the end of the century, South Florida and Fort Lauderdale could see up to 6 to 7 feet of flooding. And that would put one out of every 8 homes in Florida underwater. I love way more than 8 people in South Florida, and no one should have to live in fear of losing their families or their homes to rising seas. And that's why I'm fighting to stop climate change and create millions of good paying jobs in the process.
That is from Solving Our Climate Crisis Town Hall. I think that was probably CNN MSNBC.
It's pretty good.
In any of that, did you hear any specifics?
Sounded to me like she was talking about the tide coming in and going out.
Yeah, the tide coming in and crappy drainage.
Living a block from the water, what do you expect?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
What? Human beings are. This is the human story. We are so arrogant to think that we can control nature. You know, it started with us thinking that we can control the natural theories of economics, that we can control the natural theories of biology, and now we're literally trying to control nature. If we just destroy everything that humanity has worked for over the last 5,000 years, then we can literally change the climate. Journals of people who lived in California 150 years ago talked about wildfires and earthquakes and flooding and devastation.
These people give nothing substantial to even that they suggest to do. They're just saying, "Oh, we're going to create high-paying green jobs." What right. Doing what? What? How's that going to fix anything? What?
So let me explain. This is the great research put together by Sam Schultz. But I wanted you to understand the overarching theory of this and what we're facing as libertarians who believe in individualism, because these kids that we just heard, not all children, not all youths, are deeply programmed by this stuff.
Honestly, like to me, the easiest way to fix climate change is to force the developing world to be us. As fast as possible. They don't get no say in the matter.
Through capitalism.
Which
we've done a great job. We've gone from 30% world hunger to 10%.
Yes. We're not doing it fast enough, okay?
Right.
Faster.
So let's start with a brief history of the Green New Deal. The initial effort to realize what's now stylized as a Green New Deal was proposed by George McGovern in his presidential campaign in the early 60s. He was captivated by Eisenhower's warning of the military-industrial complex in 61, and McGovern argues that the nation's federal defense budget was akin to a New Deal program run amok. So if you think about the late 50s, early 60s, the idea of the military-industrial complex, companies like Boeing and Northrop Grumman, basically existing to build a new industry of killing people, that was not something that was new. That was really promoted and pushed by the Truman administration, by the Dulles brothers at the CIA. If you really want to see that history, go watch the Untold History of the United States by Oliver Stone on Netflix. Start at the bottom because it starts with Woodrow Wilson, but it's kind of out of order. in the Netflix playlist. But you'll see the development of the military-industrial complex and how it was designed. And then, you know, Kennedy was fighting against it. And then, oops. Then came
how'd that end up?
Yeah. So in 64, McGovern sponsored legislation for the creation of the National Economic Conversion Commission to transfer jobs in defense to peacetime work. He wanted to reallocate military spending to fight environmental problems and give defense workers green jobs. So this is an idea that you hear a lot. Let's stop building bombs and let's take those bombs and put people in education. And Obama floated a lot of these ideas. When you really go back and study post-World War II and the 50s and 60s and 70s, you start to see the genesis of a lot of our problems and a lot of the solutions that you hear bandied about to this day. So then came Vietnam, and obviously it's tough to argue in the middle of a war that you should cut defense and start moving people to environmental problems like the burning Pittsburgh Canal or whatever. So Johnson, he criticized McGovern's idea of a 10% cut to a $300 billion defense budget, calling the idea radical, although that's a drop in the bucket of what we spend now. So the idea of the NACC would be revived two decades later in the 90s as the Cold War was coming to an end, and they wanted to put people, it was a smaller private endeavor, to put them into public education. But the term Green New Deal comes about in 2007 with Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, who is an absolute bumbling moron. If you've ever actually read the things that Thomas Friedman writes, you realize he makes absolutely no sense as a person. He has – I don't know what ideology he has. It's sort of whatever's popular at the time, and then he moralizes a little bit and comes up with ideas that don't make sense. So he started calling for a Green New Deal to end fossil fuel subsidies, tax carbon dioxide emissions, and create lasting incentives for wind and solar energy. Now, Friedman's ideas made it into the mainstream the next year when Barack Obama ran. And in 2009, the United Nations followed suit and wanted a global Green New Deal to focus on government stimulus for renewable projects. A month later, then, the Democrats pushed a cap-and-trade bill through the House. Now, cap-and-trade is essentially creating an economic, like a trading system, which is the trade part. So you cap the amount of emissions a private business can emit, the amount of CO2 that you might put into the air. And if you need more CO2, then you can buy and trade for more. It's sort of like pork futures or orange futures, if you've seen Trading Places and the Chicago Stock Exchange or the Chicago forget what it is. Essentially, Elon Musk, I saw him on 60 Minutes, say the only way we're ever going to fight climate change is if you incentivize or disincentivize people from doing certain behaviors through economic penalty.
Can we talk? We not talk about the guy who dug a hole like an idiot?
His company's very boring. So the cap and trade was supposed to promise spurring $100 billion in clean energy investment and creating 1.7 million good-paying jobs, quote-unquote. The bill ultimately died in the Senate. Around the same time in 07, the British started talking about a Green New Deal. In 2009, the Tories won and the Republicans swept in the 2010 midterms, and that sort of ended it as conservatives took over at the beginning of this decade. And now, as Democrats start to resurface, this is their main issue. As they've been in the wilderness, they've been using fear, as you heard, to stoke a lot of all this. Now, what is the new Green Deal? So there is a new report out recently that you've heard a lot about from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and it says humanity has just over a decade to get carbon emissions under control before catastrophic climate change impacts become unavoidable. Activists, which means it's going to flood in Florida. Activists concerned with this have proposed the Green New Deal, hoping it will reverse the effects of climate change. It is a retread of the famous New Deal of the 1930s. Jonah Goldberg, which I put in the show notes, wrote an absolutely fantastic history of the Green New Deal and the term, and it's in the LA Times. Slapping green in front of the New Deal is yet another sign of liberal intellectual exhaustion. But AOC says, listen, none of this is brand new. These are ideas that we've called for from the beginning. As you heard, you know, in World War II, we had a command control economy, and then with the New Deal. There is a great article, again, in the show notes by Robert P. Murphy. He's writing a two-part series right now. One was posted today called The Green New Deal Debunked, and his first one was talking about how the New Deal actually hurt the economy, and he compares us to Canada, and we grew way slower than Canada or other countries. The unemployment rate was way higher because of these tactics. And so why would you take something that didn't work and want to do it again? Now, Vox, which, you know, is a site that I always look at for liberal opinion, David Roberts in his explainer wrote, "The central theme of all contemporary Green New Deal work is that GND is not just a climate change policy. It is a vision for a new kind of economy, Harry. Built around a new set of social and economic relationships. It is not merely a way to reduce emissions, but also to ameliorate or get rid of the other symptoms and dysfunctions of late capitalist economies."
Oh, the old late stage capitalism.
Uh-huh. "Growing inequality and concentration of power at the top." Now, I am worried about income inequality and the disappearing middle class as well, but that is a result of the force of government growing as a result of crony capitalism and government being bought off and paid for by big business interests that are then protected by the government. That's not capitalism. That is crony capitalism. That is graft. That is theft.
Correct. And a lot of people who should be moving into the middle class aren't because they make stupid choices in their 20s.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, well, we'll talk about the Frankfurt School and the dissolution of social institutions that made America successful at some other point, but it plays into this too. You know, environmentalism, feminism, the modern feminist movement, not the very real and very
the ninth wave or something.
Right. The idea that every person should be treated with respect and dignity and equality and justice is a very libertarian value.
Yes.
But the idea of intersectional and identity politics is not something that libertarians, I think, should find particularly useful. So he writes, he continues, "The GND is at its heart a form of social democratic populism. Its intent is to involve the entire citizenry in the shared project of adapting to the 21st century. And so in doing, materially improve the quality of life of the poor and middle class. It is an attempt to rebalance the economy and the political system away from a monomaniacal focus on private goods toward a more generous view of public goods and public purpose." Great words, horrible ideas that have never worked.
Are they proposing this now while Donald Trump, the arch enemy of everything that the most evil man in history, they're proposing this so Donald Trump to pretty much nationalize everything. They'd be fine with that?
Well, they're rolling it out now.
I'm just curious. What's the game plan? I know they say within 10 years. But.
So when Beto's president, then the ground is soft.
We'll be skateboarding to work.
So in November, the Sunrise Movement, a youth-led organization, you'd be lucky to buy a skateboard on the black market, Tad.
Speak for yourself. My rotary will run on the bones of my enemies.
So a youth-led organization called the Sunrise Movement is really backing the Green New Deal and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Justice Democrats released a proposal for a select committee on a Green New Deal. It was put in place. And the proposal states the plan for a Green New Deal and the draft legislation that will come out of this select committee shall be developed with the objective of reaching the following outcomes within the target window of 10 years from the start of the execution of the plan. Dramatically expand existing renewable sources and deploy new production capacity with the goal of meeting 100% of national power demand through renewable resources. I would totally agree with that. As a libertarian, I want a sustainable economy on renewable energy that is clean, that is not polluting the earth, that is not causing climate change. I absolutely agree with that goal. Building a national energy-efficient smart grid. Totally agree. Upgrading every residential and industrial building for the state-of-the-art energy efficiency, comfort, and safety. Agree with the goal. Don't think it could happen. Even in a completely totalitarian state, because you run out of resources. If you're going to force me to do something, shouldn't you pay it? Eliminating greenhouse gas emissions from the manufacturing, agricultural, and other industries, including by investing in local-scale agriculture communities across the country. So we're going to get rid of greenhouse gas emissions, meaning anything that runs on gas, from manufacturing, so no transportation, agriculture, so no combines, and we're going to replace that with local scale agriculture in communities across the country. Do you think there's enough green space to grow Victory Gardens in downtown Manhattan with 100,000 people within four blocks of each other? Wake up.
Yeah.
This is asinine. It's impossible.
Yeah, and people with their weird diets, I just want cauliflower. That's the only thing I'm growing.
Right. You're not going to take a middle-class society of people who are accustomed to going to a grocery full of lots of choices and then immediately rob them of those choices and expect that to turn out right.
Even if you're going to grow enough food for just your family a year, I think you need like at least almost an acre, like
right.
an eighth of an acre or something.
At the very least, yeah.
Yeah. And that's without livestock. That's just plants.
Yeah, vegetables.
So the number one job...
So how are you going to do this in the middle of the city?
You know what's the number one job in America, Tad? What would you guess?
Airplane pilot.
Think generally. You're close. Think on a very meta scale.
Hairdresser.
Okay.
Okay, okay.
My hair. Close?
Fast food worker?
No.
Oh,
truck driver. Truck driver is the number one job in America.
I don't believe you.
I can kind of believe that because...
Are you talking about North America? Because that would include Canada.
United States, driving trucks.
Okay.
Yeah, transportation in general.
Because it's the backbone of everything.
Yep. Like, I can
see that. My business uses it to get goods where it needs to go.
Yep.
I use that to get things from my my prime stuff, from my prime leader, to my prime house.
The entire corridor from New Orleans, the Panama Canal got doubled, and so New Orleans up to Nashville, up to Indianapolis, up to Chicago, up to Toronto has completely been populated with new transportation warehouses, new logistics hubs.
It's almost like people want stuff.
Right, and they want it quick, and they want it fast and within 2 days. And sure. So this next point, eliminate greenhouse gas emissions, a.k.a. gas, petroleum, natural gas, from...
Water's a greenhouse gas.
From...
Water vapor.
Repairing and improving transportation and other infrastructure, upgrading water infrastructure to ensure universal access to clean water. So any improvements that you'd like to make to your trucks, to your roads, to your water pipes in Flint, Michigan, all need to meet these new standards. Funding
no lead.
Funding massive investment in the drawdown of greenhouse gases. So they're going to use stimulus. Remember how cash for clunkers worked out under Barack Obama?
Yeah. Now you can't find a good car.
Find a good car for a reasonable price. The poorest Americans were hurt because Barack Obama stimulated the used car industry.
It is crazy how like some expensive 80s and early 90s cars are going for.
Yeah. Especially trucks. It killed like if you want to talk about like independent contractors and everything. Go out and try to buy a truck. You can't buy a truck for
anything.
Like 15, yeah. 15 grand. Like,
yeah, 15,
you used to be able to, you used to buy old beater trucks.
Anything
all day
with
long.
An EMP that is EMP proof that doesn't have a chip from the like
or a tracking device.
My cousin who lives down in southern Indiana was telling my dad that like EMP proof trucks you can get tens of thousands of dollars for those.
Yeah, I mean you can't if you can find one.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd have to find an old school diesel or something.
Yeah. Making quote green technology industry expertise products and services a major export of the US with the aim of becoming the undisputed international leader in helping other countries transition to completely greenhouse gas neutral economies and bringing about a global new green deal. So part B of the plan...
force everybody else to do the same thing.
Shall recognize that a national industrial economic mobilization of this scope and scale is a historic opportunity to virtually eliminate poverty in the United States. Because everyone will be poor, so no one can claim that they're rich.
This is economic virtue signaling at its finest.
And to make prosperity, wealth, and economic security available to everyone participating in the transformation. In the furtherance of the foregoing, the plan shall, quote, provide all members of our society across all regions and all communities the opportunity, training, education to be a full and equal participant in the transition, including through a job guarantee program to assure a living wage to every person who wants one. Now, let me say, now, Tad, I asked my grandmother who lived in Fountain Square here in Indianapolis in the city.
Before all the hippies moved in?
She lived there during the Great Depression. Her dad worked for the WPA building bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked, what did you eat for dinner? And she said, potato soup. Would you like to guess the ingredients of that potato soup?
No, I don't know. I assume potatoes, water, maybe a little salt, pepper.
Subtract the salt and pepper. And that was what they ate, three meals a day for most of the Depression, for the better part of 10 years as she was a child, because the dad was part of the New Deal.
Oh, FDR.
He was blessed with a job that helped buy potatoes. Sometimes they had a family treat, she said. Her mother would beg the butcher for a chicken neck, and they would have some. They'd have a flavor to the water.
Chicken neck.
I remember hearing stories from my grandmother's talking about how rough it was.
If you are blessed to have somebody in your family who is of that generation, ask them what it was like. I'd love to hear those stories. Please send them to me.
You want to talk about an actual? We know we had the girl, the little girl, talking earlier about how she has depression from the. Economic. What was the new thing that she has?
Oh, climate grief.
Climate grief. We'll talk about climate grief. Talk to somebody who survived the Great Depression. See if they don't have depression grief. Yeah, I think that's where they got the word depression from, right?
Right. So we're gonna watch the presidential address. I'll pause it right before he starts speaking. So when he addresses it, we'll it'll be live to us. So we'll do that at the end. We're almost done here talking about the Green New Deal. So diversify local and regional economies with a particular focus on communities where the fossil fuel industry holds significant control over the labor market to ensure workers have the necessary tools, opportunities, and someone said their family ate boiled pumpkin every day for 3 years, three meals a day.
It's so like Halloween every day.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Require strong enforcement of labor, workforce safety, and wage standards that recognize the rights of workers to organize and unionize free of coercion, intimidation, and harassment, and creation of meaningful quality career employment. So we're going to hand over power of the market to labor unions. Ensure a just transition for all workers, especially low-income communities. Protect and enforce sovereign rights and land rights of tribal nations. Not your home. Oh, no. The 136 million private property owners in this country who own a home, we're not going to respect your rights.
If this goes through, I'm building a teepee out of solar panels just so they can stay the fuck off my land.
Mitigate deeply entrenched racial, regional, and gender-based inequalities in income and wealth. So they're going to mitigate. So that sounds great. Mm-hmm. If you're white, expect the government to be fully racist against you. Harry, you're golden. Include additional measures such as basic income programs, universal health care programs, and any others select committee may deem appropriate to promote economic security, labor market flexibility, and entrepreneurism. So they're not only going to take over all of the industries of the United States and use the central bank to inflate the currency, which will make goods more expensive while they're taxing at Ocasio-Cortez says 70%. And I will say in the show notes, Tom Woods breaks down the taxation part of this. He's much more qualified than I to do that. He had an excellent podcast on this, and he goes into great detail. Hold on here. So I'm going to pause this.
Fancy looking.
Yeah, so we will go to Trump. So for those of you on the live stream, you won't miss it. We'll play it here in just a moment and give some commentary. Require strong enforcement of labor. And the $36 trillion that we talked about with the healthcare program with Bernie Sanders, think about how much bigger this is than just $36 trillion. But we've got to save little April in Florida from having her house flooded. Deeply involve national local labor unions. So this is just going to be like, do you remember when Harry talked about Elizabeth Warren's Consumer Protection Bureau?
Yes.
Do you remember what that turned into? It was meant to protect the consumer. And what did it actually do?
Protect the businesses.
It turned into a thug squad for liberal politicians to go after conservative business owners and people that they deemed. It basically was extortion. Yeah. It's racketeering, but it's by the government, so it's okay. So there is apparently a loud buzz. I don't know what.
Oh, that's the swarm of bees that just
swarm of bees. Hopefully that helps.
Loose in here.
Activists are also demanding that any representative who accepts fossil fuel money can't be allowed on the committee. Kathy Castor of Florida, is leading the committee. It does not have subpoena power, though. Ocasio-Cortez's proposal doesn't just call for a committee. It requires that the committee produce a plan that fully decarbonizes the economy, invests trillions of dollars, and provides a federal job guarantee while addressing and mitigating historic inequalities. So the three core principles of the GND: decarbonization, jobs, and justice. The plan must decarbonize the economy. We want the policy to match the findings in the IPCC report. Ocasio-Cortez's platform calls for 100% renewable electricity and decarbonizing the entire U.S. economy. The plan must include, second point, must include a federal jobs guarantee and large-scale public investments. The GND, Gunright says, opens an opportunity to renegotiate power relationships between the public sector, the private sector, and the people, as if there's not constant negotiation going on between private, public, and people.
Well, so, you don't know what's good for your own self,
right? We're interested in solutions that create more democratic structures in our economy, he says.
Large-scale investments
on the order of trillions of dollars over 10 years. A job will pay at least $15 an hour with good benefits. The plan must include a just transition, protections for those hardest hit by historical discrimination and those set to suffer the most from the effects of climate change. So essentially, yeah, so Chris says it's going to decarbonize us, all right. We're mostly carbon, and so we're going to die if this goes through.
It's true.
And so this is just a complete grab bag of the power of the gun that is government to put to the head of anybody that is not woke. So the crazy people who are constantly silencing everyone on social media, the woke mob, like Restless Giant, that basically is a racketeering and extortion organization that puts people out of business. Move On, I would qualify in that. And a lot of other Soros-backed organizations. These are racketeering. This is the thuggery is what this is going to do. Which I know that's a. I'm sorry, Harry. I didn't mean the dog whistle word of thuggery.
Oh, that was a white power dog whistle. I heard it.
So. The Data for Progress.org's take, which has some crazy good memes.
Oh yeah, I would highly recommend their memes.
Dataforprogress.org/memes,
I thought it was a joke website when I first got on it.
Right.
And
but you sent it to me and it's in the show notes.
Yeah, it's
some of those memes are great. Like,
yeah, the left can't meme. That's not a meme. That's true.
Right. True.
It's pretty good.
So
check it out.
You know, they say it's going to
They don't even hide the fact that they're completely biased. It used to be that you'd kind of hide behind some generic name like the Southern Poverty Law Center, and then you'd kind of do shit in the shadows. Not these people anymore. They're pretty out there with letting you know that they're complete leftist, and they want to overtake pretty much every aspect of your life once you start reading the fine print. But there's no actual blueprint on how to do it. They're proposing a lot. We want to propose this, propose that, and we demand it be done in 10 years.
Right.
And if it doesn't, then the world's going to end.
So they give what the world would look like. This is the utopian vision that they plan. It's necessary. It's urgent. It's going to bring job growth and economic opportunity, especially to historically disadvantaged groups.
How? No one knows, but it will.
It is popular among American voters.
It's highly popular. I did to look into their history, and that's what they do. They're trying to be a more of a demographic type of
this particular group takes liberal policy and puts it into infographics, basically.
Yeah, shitty pie graphs and stuff like that.
So we're going to treat the environment justly. It's financially feasible and necessary. We're going to transform into a low carbon economy. The U.S. needs to reduce its annual greenhouse emissions by 16% to achieve our 2025 reduction target because of the Paris Agreement, 77% to reach our 2050 target, 100% clean and renewable electricity by 2035. That is defined as solar, wind, hydro, geothermal, sustainable biomass, and renewable natural gas.
Do these people not realize how all these industries are built? They're built on the backbone of diesel fuel.
Right.
I mean, diesel, literally, yeah. And trucking. I mean, you realize how many solar panels and how many windmills you'd have to have?
Zero net emissions from energy by 2050.
It's how do you get it to there without the diesel truck or the diesel train?
Right.
I guess just hire a bunch of Amish people to raise your giant windmills. I don't...
just don't know. It's like, what, steam engine? Or just...
But then the thing about it is, nothing. The wind only blows every once in a while, and there's no way to store the energy.
Right.
All right, so the full U.S. economy must run on a mix of energy that is either zero emission or 100% carbon capture, 100% net zero building energy standards by 2030, that's 10 years from now, zero emissions from vehicles, 100% fossil fuel transportation by 2050. This includes aviation, heavy-duty vehicles, and rail.
Yeah, they don't want any gas-powered aviation.
Get ready to screech. Clean air and water need to be a right. National clean air attainment, cut methane leakage, national lead pipe replacement, guarantee access to affordable drinking water, protect 2 million new miles of waterways. We're going to restore the American landscape. We're going to reforest.
That one's key. I don't know if you glazed over that, but the whole you understand what they're doing with that, right?
What?
Expanding the waterways. Because anything that water touches, the federal government technically owns.
Oh.
So that's basically a land grab is what that is.
Interesting.
They kind of like just skip over that, but that's what that, I mean, that's what that's for.
Reforest. yeah. Restore 5 million of acres of wetlands, reforest 40 million acres of public and private land. Now we're going to do that by having absolutely no homes built. Everything's going to decay.
I don't mind planting trees. I agree. That's a bad idea.
There's more trees apparently now in the world.
There is. That's a byproduct of carbon going up.
Right.
Carbon dioxide.
No, it's because capitalism. Because people want paper, so paper companies have paper farms because wood is renewable. You plant trees.
Harry,
trees
I have,
grow.
I have neighbors. Calm down. Urban sustainability and resilience. Zero waste.
I like that one. Zero waste.
G&D is a job creator. It's going to create lots of jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Justice requires a G&D. And the Green Party summary of G&D, it's an economic bill of rights. The right to employment through a full employment program that will create 25 million jobs, no more. It doesn't say how many we're going to lose. Workers' rights include a right to a living wage, to a safe workplace, fair trades, and unions. So the Green Party wants to take care of your housing. The right to quality health care through a single-payer Medicare for all system, because that will save the environment. The right to a tuition-free, quality, federally funded, local-controlled public education system from preschool through college, also helping the environment. And the right to decent, affordable health care, housing, including an immediate halt to all foreclosures and evictions. You will no longer be allowed to evict someone from their property. Banking will completely collapse because people will stop paying their mortgages. Because if you can't convict me, I'm not going to pay you. So here's why we need to be concerned about this.
I would say it's a rather ambitious deal. I mean,
so I want you to go back and I want you to research the Socialist Party platform. Look up the name Eugene Debs. Eugene V. Debs.
Debs.
And he was from Terre Haute, actually. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he was the Socialist Party read the party platform of 1908 and 1912. And you see in their referendums, which is California ended up getting referendums, you see direct election of senators by the populace instead of by the general assemblies, the deleveraging of socialism. You see a radical vision of America that comes about by Barack Obama. 100 years later, after progressives got a hold of the education system, they were able to implement all of these plans. And so if we don't want to live in a world like this, then we need to articulate a better vision of tomorrow, because this is really scary stuff. This is North Korea. This is absolutely a completely controlled economy. Anybody who tries to live outside of this system will immediately be persuaded.
Sent to the camps.
Right. Persuaded, Harry. Let's use persuaded. It's justice, right? This is insane. But
well, you're going to die anyway within 10 years if we don't do this.
Right. But we cannot wave our hands, dismiss this as just this is insane. We have to actually articulate why this is a problem. I feel that we've done that. We've explained that and tried not to be too dismissive, given you lots of counter arguments as well as all the facts that you need in the show notes. But you need to understand this stuff and you need to argue against it in a way that is respectful to your opponents, because this is the next 100 years. And you heard in those children.
This is going to be their platform for the next.
Yeah.
And those every election from here on out.
Right. And those kids are never, maybe at some point they'll wake up and go, wait a minute, we were told by 2050 the world was going to end and it's still here, and we've eradicated world hunger through capitalistic policies. But we need to be aware of this stuff and really argue against it.
Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. Because it's easy to get upset at it, just look at it on his face to understand, like, this is illogical, this doesn't make any sense in its current. But it grasps at those people's emotional ties that they've been taught or indoctrinated in their schools. Like, you know, if we don't do this, this will happen. This is what happened, with nothing backing or proving with it.
Right.
You know, just showing someone that this is what's happening. Like, I think the argument on its face is ridiculous without having nuclear power on the table. As a renewable energy source, that is
the problem when people say that, Harry, is they make the mistake that they think that they're actually trying to cure the problems with the environment.
They don't believe this shit.
They're not actually. They don't actually. I don't believe that I don't believe that Al Gore really believes more than I believe. Like, yeah, it's going to be a problem for the Maldives. We're going to have flooding in Boston. Venice may be in trouble. But, like, he takes it and he blows it into a global catastrophe. Millions will die.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to gain political power for himself. It's no different than in Jericho. Mm-hmm. The conspiracy behind everything that you eventually find out, like, oh, man. Like, well, just watch it. I'm not going to spoil. But, like, people have a great desire for power. Mm-hmm. This is an immense amount of power. Even if you're governing over mounds of dirt and dead bodies, as long as you're in charge, you don't care.
Right.
And I don't think that Ocasio-Cortez – I absolutely don't want to make fun of Ocasio-Cortez, because I think it's like Donald Trump. When Greg said something to me a long time ago. He goes, you don't realize it's a complete negative for your cause to mock Donald Trump or to moralize against Donald Trump, because there's so many new people being awakened by Donald Trump, and they go – they don't hear you going after the man Donald Trump. They hear you going after them. And he was totally right about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same with Ocasio-Cortez. The people that she is bringing into her movement will someday figure out that this is all nonsense. And, well, never mind. So sorry, Trump started playing. What we're going to do is we're going to end this, make a clean break, and then do a daily episode around all that, so that way we get that information out quicker, and it's nice and clean and segmented out. But I just don't think that these people really – I think somebody like Ocasio-Cortez is well-intentioned. I think she genuinely believes this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she realizes that she's been completely manipulated. Like, these kids are completely being brainwashed. There's no other word for it. They're being propagandized into believing something. It's very Hitlerian. It's very much like communism. This is absolutely atrocious.
The problem I have with it, they don't even give any substance of what they want to do. It's pretty much all buzzwords and, oh, we need to do this. We have to do this. We have to do this. But they don't lay out any how you could actually do it.
Yeah.
Right. In reality, I mean, they'll say, well, we can have 100% renewable energy by 2030, but how? What are you proposing? Are you proposing the entire country run off solar panels, or what? Technology isn't even there technically yet to harness to keep the power.
Yeah, like the other thing is, you can tell it's also graphed by people who are stuck in the side of cities.
Oh yeah,
like go to the flyover places that you don't want to go to. You know, come say that exact same policy sitting out in, I don't know, the middle of, like, Scranton, somewhere out in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, or, you know, down there in the some parts of Arkansas.
I think they think the entire economic system is a lot simpler than what I don't think they understand how large and vast the American economic system is. I mean, just think about how all the parts it takes to make a hamburger, I guess, at McDonald's.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you've got the beef production. You've got all the different vegetables. I mean, those aren't all from the same spot. They're all just the amount of miles that you have to travel and mm-hmm. just to make a damn hamburger.
Correct. Yeah.
They and you're going
to. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what? And then you go to the store, the store being built. I mean, the power coming in for everything. You know, I mean, there's so much power just to say that, oh, we're going to run all this off renewable energy. That, and we're going to do it in 10 years? Good luck. How are you going to plan this? I mean, it's such a vast thing to try to say, hey, we're going to do this.
Right. I can't even fathom that idea. Now, like, the thing is, you could say, like, okay, if the idea was to switch to nuclear power, it's like, okay, I'm on board with that because that does, you know, that does it. You know, that does provide enough power, enough power.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's also multiple tiers of what the power is. You know, I mean, right, you have yeah. your power that's powering lights. Mm-hmm. Then the power, your car is different. Than
correct.
That.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
I mean,
yeah,
you're,
yeah.
There's, yeah. Yeah, there's natural
you
gas.
You can't get past cars. Yeah. Right now, it is what we have. It's the safest fuel that we can put in a vehicle.
And when you have an economy built on the backbone of trucking, I mean, and transportation and the movement of people. I mean, that.
But like we,
it's crazy.
But you're going against people who believe in thorium cars and solar freaking roadways. You know.
And I say, show me. I'm on board. Show me. If you show me something that works.
Yeah.
But
I want
it's cost effective.
Solar
you can't.
Roadways.
I want to end this. It's the 60th anniversary of iPencil by Leonard Reed, and it is a very simple.
Well, that's kind of what I was talking about with the hamburger.
Yeah, it's kind of the, you know, a guy, for instance, a guy tried to make a club sandwich and it took him like 8 years to grow all the food to make a single club sandwich. Yeah, we should be green like France. How many nuclear power plants does France have? Just be quiet. France is run on nuclear power, you know, but they're so green. So iPencil, just listen to this. We're celebrating 60 years of this great treaty of capitalism and the spontaneous order that develops out of the free market. This is Milton Friedman presenting iPencil.
The basic principles underlying the free market, as Adam Smith taught them to his students in this university, are really very simple. Look at this lead pencil. There's not a single person in the world who could make this pencil. Remarkable statement? Not at all. The wood from which it's made, for all I know, comes from a tree that was cut down in the state of Washington. To cut down that tree, it took a saw. To make the saw, it took steel. To make the steel, it took iron ore. This black center, we call it lead, but it's really graphite, compressed graphite. I'm not sure where it comes from, but I think it comes from some mines in South America. This red top up here, the eraser, bit of rubber, probably comes from Malaya, where the rubber tree isn't even native. It was imported from South America by some businessmen with the help of the British government. This brass ferrule, I haven't the slightest idea where it came from, or the yellow paint, or the paint that made the black lines, or the glue that holds it together. Literally thousands of people cooperated to make this pencil. People who don't speak the same language, who practice different religions, who might hate one another if they ever met. When you go down to the store and buy this pencil, you are in effect trading a few minutes of your time for a few seconds of the time of all those thousands of people. What brought them together and induced them to cooperate to make this pencil? There was no commissar sending out orders from some central office. It was the magic of the price system, the impersonal operation of prices that brought them together and got them to cooperate to make this pencil so that you could have it for a trifling sum. That is why the operation of the free market is so essential, not only to promote productive efficiency, but even more, to foster harmony and peace among the peoples of the world.
When you put economic interest at the forefront, harmony results. When you take away the force of government and the gun that is inherently put to your temple to build that house or give us control of your factory, that's what creates division. What keeps this society in conflict is the need to control the force of government. And if we laid off of using the government to force other people to leave to live as we see fit, then we would see more harmony, more peace, more people using the price system to live in harmony with each other because of spontaneous order that creates things like the pencil. So the plan for solving the crisis of healthcare, the crisis of the climate change, the crisis of any issue you can think of, tension between nations, is to use the free market to solve that crisis, to allow entrepreneurship to spawn, to create new solutions that will reduce carbon emissions and will restore the planet. And when you allow people to cooperate, even when it's disconnected in the way that you just heard, people find a way. The human species works together to cooperate, to find a way to solve our problems. A man needed to write something on a piece of paper and wanted to erase it. And so he had the idea of a pencil. And over time, who is the inventor of the pencil? I don't know. But it takes
James Pencil.
It takes many, many different people to create that pencil now. And you're trading your money, which is essentially you're trading your time and labor at your job for a piece of their time and labor and their job. And we are able to live on this planet with 7 billion people because of the dispersion of efforts across the planet. And when you try to take a government and centralize it and force people to do what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez thinks is the most important thing to do, resentments are created, wars are started, revolutions are started, and that's where the inherent conflict of our modern society lies. The people who are disadvantaged in this society, who are poor, who need that economic justice, are poor because the government kept black people in chains. It put people in camps. It is the government that made those decisions because the politicians of the time used the force of government to segment and segregate people and instead of giving them economic opportunity. And that is how we're going to solve these problems. That is the solution. It is the concept of iPencil. So thank you to Leonard Reed for writing that. Thank you to Milton Friedman for presenting it. Thank you for listening to us here on We Are Libertarians. I want to give my co-host the final word here. Harry Price, final thoughts for the episode.
When it comes to different resources out there, like I said, it's just like with iPencil, just anything like I said, is just if you look beyond and just take a second, breathe for a second, whatever someone's talking about getting rid of or adding more of, think about that for a second. Think a couple of steps ahead and think of what are the unintended consequences of these things, what could and possibly will happen, you know, if you move these steps.
Yes.
And usually the person you're probably talking to is probably going to be a friend. Remember, try to keep them as your friend while you're having this conversation. They're not your enemy.
Yeah. Just because they don't agree with you on this subject, you have to be sensitive to the fact that they have been subject to a lot of programming, like we heard.
Yeah.
And you making fun of them or mocking them doesn't help. Like, and I get it. Like, we post a lot of memes, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of teasing, but we do try to be respectful. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I've told him lay off of the Ocasio-Cortez memes because, like, how many times can you see the same joke? Oh, this person's dumb.
Right.
Okay. It's like we're on day 800 of – I saw an article today on some website. I think it was the New York Times, and one of their op-ed people was writing the same article that we've had for 800 days now. This is not who we are. Donald Trump is a morally gross man.
Surely this is the end of Trump.
Yep. But boring.
Orange man bad.
But we know. We said that in 2015, right? And so we didn't vote for him. You're still on it. Like the idea of this isn't who we are with Donald Trump has never been effective because people have just said it so often that nobody gives a shit anymore. Like calling her dumb is calling the individual that is liberal on your Facebook page from your high school an idiot too. Mm-hmm. And they're then going, wow, libertarians are fucking assholes, yeah. Which let them find out in person.
Right. It's the exact same thing when they, you know, call your candidate dumb.
Yeah.
You're just going to turn them off. Because even when you have an argument or something like that, or talking with your friend.
Think about how it makes you feel when people make the Aleppo joke.
Correct.
Or yeah. When you see James Weeks naked on stage. Okay, get the fuck over it.
I'm just ashamed.
I think I saw him in Wendy's bathroom earlier naked.
Oh, we didn't get to that story.
Oh. Also, the thing is you have to understand is when you also talk with people is that when you're having this, you know, discussion with someone, sometimes you also could be wrong. So also be open up to take in new information that you're getting from somebody.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah. Dad?
I just try to stay away from all the emotional appeals and the grips for the feels, I guess, that they try to push when it comes to the climate issue. You know, yeah. We're all going to be dead. It's all appeals to emotion. And I try to keep anything, I try to keep what I think to the hard evidence. I mean, if you want to show a graph or whatever of the ice cores, fine. Let's talk about that. But you're proposing, or what they're proposing is pretty much government take control of everything, or to tax.
We don't agree.
To tax you into oblivion.
Well, the problem,
and I don't think that solves anything.
The problem with politics today is that if you don't agree on the solution, then you can't agree you can't agree on the problem. You can't have a conversation about anything because the other person's stupid. And the liberal side of things, the left side, is much worse at this. That if you don't agree with me, you're not just an idiot, you're also morally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're an immoral person.
That's
and
the appeal to the emotion.
If you think that you're going to win the hearts and minds of the American people by calling them stupid and immoral, you're just not going to. Right. You know, and that's where they don't realize that they're building in Generation Z, the largest generation on Earth already, of counterculture of conservative-leaning people who are tired of the nonsense, and so they're a little nihilist.
Damn vaccines.
Yep.
Yep, that's what happens.
All right, thanks for listening. Thanks to Craig DaCosta, the Libertarian Coalition, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle for being our $100 a month Patreon subscribers. Anybody who donates to the show, we thank you very much. You keep the lights on, you keep this running, and without the monetary donations, this thing ceases to exist. I am basing your participation, promotion, and donations to the We Are Libertarians Network on your willingness to have us in your home. If you're not going to participate, then I'm not going to do it because there's no point in me yelling at myself. So
especially when you're underwater.
That's exactly right.
Years.
When you're drowning here in Indianapolis, Indiana. All right. Thanks, guys. We're going to do if you're listening in the feed, then it's already up there. We're going to do a little Trumpy in his wall, and then we'll post that in the feed tonight. And then, you know, you'll listen to this tomorrow. Unless you're a patron.
Then you can listen to it live.
You can listen live, and you get it that night. So I literally get up from this chair, walk over to my other chair, and edit and post. So, all right, thanks for listening to We Are Libertarians. We love your participation. So please, editor at We Are Libertarians, send me an email if you want to talk, or join the Discord, join the Facebook group, join whatever. We're out there. Go to our website, WeAreLibertarians.com, and you can find all the ways you can connect to us. Join our book club on the fourth Sunday of every month. We're now going to have a Zoom conversation about a book. January's book is Them by Ben Sasse. So if you want to participate in the book club discussion, then check that out at WeAreLibertarians.com. We're using Goodreads. And please subscribe to the YouTube. We're trying to get to 100. We're almost there, and then we can start monetizing, or at least have our monetization turn off on individual videos. But, please go help us hit 1,000 subscribers on the YouTube. Join all your accounts, all your 50 accounts, and hit subscribe. So,
and I get to wear my penguin onesie when we hit 1,000.
You're going to wear your penguin onesie?
Yeah, if we hit 1,000.
All right. So we need maybe next Tuesday if you make it happen. So please hit subscribe. All right. We'll see you in a couple days.